This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith, and we're at Fire Headquarters. It's been a while. We check in from time to time with Chief Smith. And, Chief, the middle of summer, it's kind of cool as we talk today, but how's things going?
So far, so good. You know, we've had, like you said, a pretty good start to the summer. Lot of activities in town, which always ramp up, you know, kind of the visitors in town and the traffic on the roads, and subsequently the more people and the more cars that are here, we get a few more accidents, a few more incidents, a few more people to take care of. And you know, with the summer influx of folks that own homes here that predominantly utilize those in the summer, so those numbers are all up. But you know, knock on wood, things are going very smoothly. I think the messaging and fire prevention and safety and things that we've been really pushing and trying to be more active in the community and provide resources and so forth is paid off of that, or we've just been very lucky. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's been relatively, I wouldn't say calm, but it's been steady, you know, kind of what we expect in the summer. And we haven't had anything major to speak of as far as incidents, so we're pretty happy for that.
Probably shouldn't have said that.
You know? Yeah, we did have the pretty major fire over on Centennial Ave, so but that's not related to predominantly summer type activities, but you know, as far as boating and visitors and that type of thing, nothing that's really jumps up and says, oh yeah, this is the season's off to a bad start. It's actually off to a good start. It's been really busy, which is good for the town, good for the income for folks that are doing seasonal work, so we're happy to see that, and if they need us, they call us.
Now, you were landlocked in Michigan, as I recall. Is that so? This is a little bit different.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, we're obviously Michigan's a peninsula, so we're surrounded by water, but it was quite a bit further than right out the backyard as it is here, and not quite the same. A lot more salt in the water around here.
How do you coordinate with Coast Guard? Because it just occurs to me that you mentioned traffic in the summer, which we all know in the area is just ridiculous at times. But there is so much more boating. The Coast Guard has so many warnings out about safety and so on. But the fire department is frequently involved in assisting the Coast Guard and vice versa.
Yeah, we, anytime there's any offshore emergency, if the Coast Guard requires any type of assistance on the medical side of it, if it sounds like it's an individual or individuals that are injured or ill out at sea at any distance, we typically try to get on board with them if they have time for us to get over there.
Oh, okay.
There's certain circumstances where they'll just launch due to the circumstances. They just need to get a vessel on scene immediately, so they will do that right away, and then they'll make their assessment. And they may call for a helicopter out there, or they may bring them back to port. But if we can get a medic on the boat with them, or two medics out on the boat with them, we've done that frequently.
Really?
And guys will be 8-10 miles out and taking care of whatever needs to be taken care of. So we have a great working relationship with the Coast Guard. They do their thing and involve us, like I said, whenever they can. So if they can get us on board the vessel to help, they do. If they can't, they don't. And then when we start getting closer to shore, where it's really more of a local, local issues and boating issues either in the harbor, around town, near shore, that's where the coordination really starts to pick up between the police department as they operate a boat, the harbor master's office obviously operates vessels, and the Coast Guard. So, it's one of those situations that who received the call, what is the call in question? Is it a kayaker in trouble? Is it a boat in trouble? Is it something out there in the water that nobody really knows what it is, but it's abnormal, and so they're just out taking a look. So we'll get involved in those at the appropriate level, and depending on who's responding first, we may get on board that vessel, or may stand by on shore wherever the incident is, because they're typically bringing, obviously, anybody that's hurt back to shore, and that's really where most of the care is going to take place. You can't really get a lot done unless it's critical things that have to be done right away out on the water, especially on smaller vessels. There's not a lot of room to work, so it's going to be very basic level care for the most part, especially because you're usually a few minute, boat ride to get back to wherever we're going to take them ashore. So we are actually working with the Coast Guard and Harbor Master's office now to kind of fine tune our planning a little bit and kind of fine tune our communications. We just took possession of the radios, but they're still out. We got to get the programming and everything done on new radios that we bought with FEMA grant. And so we're trying to make sure that as we program these things, that we're really focused on having every channel we might ever conceivably need. And so that's where that interface with the Coast Guard and the Harbor Master's Office, the police department's kind of, it's kind of having a great effect on several things. You know, we're getting brand new radios to allow us to talk to basically anybody we need to speak to over the radio, but it's also got our attention back on our plans and preparation to make sure that not only can we do it, we've written down how we do it, we train our people on how to do it, so we make sure that we're consistent with it and that we're doing it better than we did before. If there was any gaps previously, we're trying to identify those and kind of tighten those things up. You know, the radios only have a certain range to them, so there's, unfortunately, we cover a large jurisdiction, and when you take it out to sea a little ways, those communications are a big deal, and able to coordinate that, but having the plan in place to make sure that we're all on the same page is just as important as having the equipment. If you have the equipment and don't know how to use it or don't program it right, it doesn't do you a lot of good.
You know, the last time we chatted, you mentioned I asked you about calling the police, the fire station, police station, whatever, an emergency, and you corrected and directed me to the fact that 911 is the quickest and safest way to do it if a person is in trouble, and I appreciate that. I didn't know that. The other thing I was thinking of with respect to the Coast Guard and so on is that in Gloucester, in the fire department, you have a lot of guys who are former fishermen. They're very aware of Mother Atlantic and the coastline, so it must be a pretty good relationship sometimes when these guys are called to assist on the shore, off the rocks or whatever.
Yeah, it's definitely helpful. These guys, a lot of them know the waters like the back of their hand. I mean, they're lobstermen from way back. With their recent retirements, we've actually lost a couple of those guys that were real knowledgeable, so that's kind of a setback. But, we don't operate a boat ourselves, but having that knowledge of the coastline and the operation of vessels themselves goes a long way. I mean, firemen are kind of like jack of all trades, really. I mean, you've got to know a lot about a lot of different topics and subjects in order to assist those when they get in trouble at what they do every day. And so they're really the experts, but when they get in trouble doing what they're expert at, they call us. So when we show up, we're kind of expected to be able to take it to that next level. So, how your house is put together and how it comes apart is pretty important to us. Machinery, boating, how to get to you safely and get you off a vessel safely. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. I wish we had a little bit more time for training and those types of things out on the water. But, if we had a boat, it would be a bit of a different circumstance. But so we work with the Coast Guard and the Harbor Master, the police department to kind of, let us know what we're missing. Where can we fill in and kind of close the gaps that, skill sets that they don't have. Obviously, they're not paramedics and we are. So, that's a skill set we bring to the field for them. Firefighting, chemical type incidents and hazmat, that's more along our line of work than theirs. So it's, cool. Team effort.
Now, tell me about the radios.
Yeah, the radio. So we took a FEMA grant that the city was good enough to accept. We had one of our lieutenants that wrote the grant and kind of piggybacked on Captain LeGrande, who's now promoted to Deputy LeGrande. So his initial grant that we got, our SCBA, the breathing apparatus, replaced last fiscal year. We've taken that same grant, and Lieutenant Nick and Ouellette, who does most all of our communications work and works in the watch station with our fire alarm system, and they were in the process of closing that out and getting rid of that. So he's been focused on radios and what we need, and took it upon himself to kind of take that grant and mold it into, the same basic information and needs as far as, where we're at, what do we have, and financially, what can we afford to do and when we need to do it. And that's kind of the biggest piece of these grants. So, we'll see if we can continue that streak. But really, the kind of the snow and ice deficit was probably one of the bigger pieces that helped us get these grants, because these were time-sensitive purchases that had to be made in the near future while we still had significant debt that eats away at those you know, relatively smaller capital purchases that come every 10 years or so. So we're, you know, it's that long-term planning where we still need to do a little bit more work here in the city. And certainly with this administration, that's at the top of their list. And so they've been outstanding with helping us with this and authorizing us to go after these grants and to jump on top of these opportunities. So, you know, we've brought in almost $1 million in the last couple of years in grant funding that, you know, takes away from the burden on the taxpayer. So it's a great, you know, a great thing for us to do. And I can't thank our guys enough, both Tom and Nick. They did a great job. They wrote a better grant than what I had time to write. And certainly it hit the mark because we came in within the first few rounds both last year and this year. And the closer you are to the beginning of the awards, mm-hmm. is the higher your grant ranked amongst the entire country. So they did really well. Those guys are very focused and they know their job, they know their craft, and they applied it 110% to grant writing, which is not something you really expect most firefighters to do. It's a lot of work, a lot of energy and effort that goes into it. So we'll be getting these radios hopefully in service in the next probably month or so. Takes quite a bit of time to get them programmed and get them engraved and all the equipment that goes along with it and put them in service, plus the training. So as I speak of radios, they're going off. So we got to do an in-service training for everybody in the department before we can just put these out of the street. Sure. There's a lot to them. They can, there's a lot of function to them that's new that these guys will have to be trained on and get used to. But the basic operation is pretty similar, so it should be an easy transition from the current radio to the new radio.
Are you supposed to be more reliable, better range?
Yeah, these radios are certainly a much higher caliber, if you will, of engineering as far as the technology that's in them. So sound cancellation, so background noise is cut out. You know, it's loud at fire scenes, trucks operating, hose streams operating, the noise of a fire itself. So, you know, the radios pick up on the voice pretty well, and they eliminate a lot of that background noise. So the technology in them, because these are 10 years newer, is much more advanced. It's the same principle in operation of, transmitting that signal. Signal strength on these is a little bit higher, so it gives us a little bit better range. The clarity is supposed to be improved because of these features like noise cancellation and so forth. So, the radio is about the same size. It's designed actually to be used with a gloved hand, the way the knobs are spaced, the size of the knobs and the buttons on them. This is a purpose-built firefighters radio, and it allows us, the best thing is it allows us to operate on both the UHF frequencies, which the police department here uses, as well as some of our neighboring fire departments, and operate on the VHF spectrum, which is where we operate currently. Most marine channels are all VHF, and many of our local fire departments are also on VHF. But like I said, there are those, Beverly, they operate on UHF. So when we go mutual aid out of town to assist people, we don't have to borrow their radio that we're unfamiliar with. We have our own tool, our own radio that we're trained on and competent with. And while you're in a fire, you don't need to learn a new radio while you're in the middle of fighting a fire. Right. So this goes a long way to firefighter safety, especially for us here in town, because it's, our radios, the ones that we have now, are so old that they don't even make them and they no longer support them. So just trying to maintain them was getting difficult. And that was, another reason that the federal government decided to back, the purchase of $500,000 radios for, a town the size of Gloucester. It's a lot of money. But unfortunately, the equipment's expensive, but you get a decade's worth of life out of it. So we don't expect to have to do this for another 10 or 12 years.
As we sit in your office, Chief, there's a big old empty chair over here to the right.
Yeah, I'm missing the guy that was in that chair, and certainly not just the person, but the work that he got done. Tom Aiello, who was our assistant chief, retired back on 9th, 10th of July, and unfortunately, he was immediately missed by me, not only in his wisdom and his encouragement of me doing my job and his help in that, but the work that the man got done. For those of you that know Tom, he's a pretty quiet guy, doesn't say a whole lot, but what he says, people tend to listen to. 32 plus years of experience here in town doing this job, and always done a great job. You know, no one's ever had a bad word to say about him, and he goes about his work quietly. I'm surprised at how far behind I've already fallen in the short amount of time that he's gone, okay. And I've had to pick up his work. Unfortunately, the city didn't fund a replacement for that position at this time, and you know, I'm working with the administration to try to find a funding source to bring it back during this fiscal year, so we'll see how that goes. You know, they're working on it as well, but both myself and you know, Chief McCarthy at the police department, both of our assistant chief positions went unfunded in this current fiscal year to help kind of close the gap that they had with the budget. So we're hoping that, you know, now that we've solidified our budget, the state is apparently solidifying its budget, and it looks like that, you know, they may be giving some additional funding to cities and towns that really wasn't expected. You know, the news was not good. It was pretty bleak as to, you know, what the state was going to be able to provide, the numbers that we were getting in, you know, new growth and so forth, and our budget had to be tempered and make sure that they were online. So, you know, Jim Destino, who's the CAO, has got probably the toughest job in the city, which is balancing that budget every year and working with the mayor to get that done. So, you know, he and John Dunn put in a lot of time to get it done. Unfortunately, this job fell to the wayside in part of that process, and I've been beating my drum every day to get them to restore it. So I'm sure they're tired of hearing me asking them, how's it going, where are we at, but I continue to do so, and it is really critically important to fill this job. You know, the assistant chief does everything I do in my absence, so they're second in command of the department. It's a non-union position, so they're not beholden to the union. Gives me that additional assistance in managing that was sorely needed here in the department. It's been identified both in the MRI audit in the past, and both, you know, not only from that perspective, but all the administrations that have been in the city have all identified the same need. I have concurred with that and supported it 110% since I got here a little over 5 years ago, and said, yeah, this is a position that is sorely needed in the department, and it makes it extremely difficult to manage, you know, the number of folks that we have here and the different duties that we fulfill, and to chase things down like, you know, $1 million worth of grants over the last 2 years if your hands are tied doing work that really needs to be shared with others. So it's not only, you know, those duties as being second in command, but it's all the personnel operations of the department fell to that position. All of the emergency management duties falls to that position. So now, unfortunately, I'm wearing all those hats yet again. And, you know, when we consolidated the department from four groups to three groups, we lost a deputy chief. And this was a molding of that deputy chief's position. All of the responsibilities that deputy chief held, even as a union member, was administrative duties, and they were the personnel functions, you know, managing leave time and tracking all of the leave time, personnel that are out injured and sick and vacations and all of these different things. It takes a lot of energy and effort to kind of make sure that you coordinate all of that and that you're keeping all 74 folks, you know, on the right page. And, you know, and it's, unfortunately, now I get to wear that hat too. So, you know, it's something that we just have to get done, and hope that we can find the funding to fill that position, because unfortunately you can only do so much in a day, in a week, in a month, in the year. And so there are other programs that I feel are critically important, like chasing grants and other things that we've been going after that may suffer a little bit for a little while till we get it done. And, you know, the administration understands this and identifies this, and that's where they're, you know, they're supportive of trying to find that funding, but it is what it is. You know, if we don't get it done in this fiscal year, then certainly I think it will get filled in the next fiscal year. But I'm certainly hoping before that. It's July isn't even over. Tommy's only been gone a few weeks, and I already feel like I'm drowning into work already. So
okay, Chief, and finally, personnel. It was in the paper about the retirements of some of your longtime veterans here at the Gloucester Fire Department, and you mentioned Captain LaGrande being promoted to Deputy Chief. So, what is the status of the number of personnel now?
So right now we're down six, with five of those being funded. One of them would be the assistant chief's position that was not funded. The rest are line firefighting positions. So the other retirements, besides Tom Allo, who was the assistant chief, was Deputy Schlichty, who retired. After him, well, actually about the same day as him, was Joe Misuraca, Timmy Gallagher, Mike McCarthy, and John McCarthy. So all those positions need to be filled. Unfortunately, the assistant chiefs won't be filled until we get the funding. Once Deputy Schlichty retired, that moved, Tom LaGrande, who was a captain at the time, into the deputy's position, and then it trickled down from there. So there's been a promotion of Dominic Barbagallo from lieutenant to captain, as well as Kevin Gargan from firefighter to lieutenant, and then we're in the process of hiring. So we've requested a list for two of the vacancies. We have the five to fill. Monetarily, we just can't fill all of them at once. Once folks retire, there's, the legal requirement of paying off any unused sick leave, and that's not a subject of any kind of bargaining or otherwise. That's state law and has to happen. So a lot of folks, they don't really understand, but the sick leave that gets accrued, if folks are using it arbitrarily, which we don't allow, it just costs the city overtime money if you're running tight. So paying folks off at it, for that funding at the end of their career for the time that they didn't use, some people seem to object to that, but you're either going to pay it by letting them use sick leave, which they're not allowed to use arbitrarily, or you're going to pay it off later. And I don't believe in the allowance of just letting it be used willy-nilly up front. If any of these guys get sick or injured off the job, that's the only thing that keeps them employed, so to speak, and being paid. Otherwise, because they can't come to work hurt. This isn't a desk job. It's not a 9-to-5 thing. It's a contact sport, and if they have any injuries that are off duty, or illness that's off duty, they can't come to work sick and injured. So that's what the sick bank is there for, and we hold pretty tight to their ability to use it. So we keep pretty good control over that.
All right. Finally, and I lied. This is my final question now. You sound like management versus labor there. And speaking of that, what's the status of the contract?
Yeah. So there's, fortunately, it's not so much us versus them. It's pretty cooperative. This is a great union. These guys do excellent work. A good example of that is the upcoming blood drive, the MDA. Peace will be going on soon. So there's a lot of things that this union does to give back to the community. And frankly, I prefer dealing with a union, dealing with a one-on-one, one employee at a time type of thing in a non-structured environment is more difficult. This is a paramilitary operation. And so really the union function, I think, is a better approach to managing contracts and pay scales and leave and all those types of things versus kind of the one-off, but certainly the contract is expired right now with this union. We started negotiations a while back. Unfortunately, it's summertime, so it gets to be extremely difficult to schedule, 6, 8, 10 people's schedules together to get it done. I know that the city's been extremely busy with the police contracts, so that it seems like I think every union in the city's contracts expired this year. So it's been nonstop in HR and in city administrative offices and the mayor's office trying to manage this. So it's not an easy thing, Just trying to get a meeting coordinated can sometimes be difficult with schedules. But we have had one or two, maybe two meetings, thus far with the union. So it's a work in progress. We'll see where we end up. And like I said, I don't really expect, a whole lot to happen over the summer just because scheduling is about impossible, to get everybody that needs to be in the room, because you just can't move these meetings along and have people that are key to either side's, you know, position not in the room at the time when you're having those negotiations. So, you know, we're not really in any huge rush. We'd like to get it done quickly, but again, it's got to be done right, and that means that everybody needs to be in the room and have those conversations and deal with the things that are of issue on either side and come to some kind of you know, mutual agreement on this. And we've been able to do that thus far. Like I said, I think this union works pretty well with the city, and they always have in their past. You know, there's always going to be rough patches where we don't agree, but that's just kind of how life is, you know. It's no different at home, that we don't always agree on things, and it's a negotiation, so that's kind of just how it goes.
Well, barring a catastrophe, I guess I'll see you in the fall then.
Yeah, absolutely, and if we have any other, you know, things going on in the summer, we'll get back with you and get it out there. So I got a couple of things on the burner that I'm hoping to move forward, some new kind of progressive types of ideas and thoughts on how we can kind of do things a little bit better, really. But we'll see if we have the money to do that is the first thing, and then how well it will really apply to what we're doing, the kind of the cost benefit thing. You know, we're kind of looking at drones and what they can do for the city. You know, from the public safety perspective on the fire department side, you know, it doesn't seem to me to be an intrusive thing into people's lives. You know, we're not doing it for surveilling, and I wouldn't think the public would expect that we would be surveilling. But I understand the argument that, you know, if government is engaged in using drones, there needs to be a lot of you know, policy behind that and approval. And there is FAA requirements. So I got to look into how it would work for us and at what cost. You know, we have a lot of woods, and we get woods fires. We get folks lost out in the woods, and this may be a tool that can really cut down the amount of time we spend searching instead of fixing the problem, helping the folks that need our help. And so again, you know, technology versus, you know, the risk benefit of using it. What are the legitimacies of using it? And at the end of the day, can we afford it? And does it, you know, really benefit us enough based on the cost? So we'll see.
I can't wait for the next meet. Thank you, Chief.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Chief.
Thank you.
That is Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.